Thanks again for tuning in for the Book Club at 91.7 on WVXU. I'm Mark Purcell. On the phone with me from Columbus is Linda Cass. She's the author of the novel Tass's Song. It's her first novel, a debut novel based on some family history. Linda Cass, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you, Mark. Pleasure to be here.
So I noticed in the acknowledgments, and I had wondered because you write so intimately about this main character, Tasso Rosinski, who is a violinist and growing up in Poland just before the outbreak of World War II. But I noticed you said the motivation for this fictional story was the truth that inspired it. What was the truth that inspired Tasso's song, Linda?
Well, Mark, my mother lived in Eastern Poland during the gathering storm of this World War II and through it. And so she was my inspiration. The touch points of her life, stories that she told me when I was a child, those really were the inspiration, although Tasa is not my mother.
just inspired by such. No, is this the area in Poland where Tasa lives? Is that...
Yes.
The homeland?
Yes, I did stick with that for a really specific reason, Mark, because Eastern Poland was a very unusual area of Poland and what happened there during World War II. It was really the fringe of the battlefield in many ways. It was the place where both the Germans and the Soviets attacked at the start of the war, and the Germans, Hitler particularly, made a pact with Stalin and really gave that tract of Eastern Poland to the Soviets for the first 2 years of the war. So those individuals who lived in Eastern Poland, this far eastern part of Poland, from 1939 to 1941 were actually under Soviet rule during that time.
So what was the inspiration for making Tasa a violinist? And music plays a big role in Tasa's song here. She's a classical musician. There's references to Saint-Saëns and Chopin and Beethoven throughout the book. Why that connection with the music there, Linda?
Well, first of all, I think I came to this novel asking the question how someone survives these kinds of atrocities. And to me, music is very healing, and I felt that my main character needed to have something like music that would help her get through these difficult experiences. So then why the violin? Well, my mother played the violin, although she was no prodigy, and I really never saw a violin in my household or I never saw her play a violin. But the instrument itself, the violin, is such a beautiful, beautiful expressive instrument, and it's small enough that it can be taken from place to place, and certainly people who were being persecuted were moving, and Tasa is moving from one location sometimes to another, and so it's an instrument she could take with her.
Well, beyond the music, you also touch throughout the novel on several highlights of atrocities that were happening in the run-up to World War II, when Hitler had risen to power in Germany and begun to spread his negative influence all around, including into Poland. Why did you feel the telling of the story from the Jewish perspective, and especially with highlights, or not highlights, but probably lowlights, Kristallnacht and the like, showing up as touchstones in your book?
Well, these were experiences that my own mother did have. She was Jewish, and yet many of the really the heroes in her life were not. And not to give away too much, but there is a family, a man, his wife, and daughter who really they actually save the family. They hide the family, and so this is the story of of a Jewish violinist who is experiencing the kind of persecution that was so prevalent at that time in that war.
I'm speaking with Linda Cass, the author of Tasa's Song, a new novel. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. So the research you did, you said stories from your mom, Linda, but I know you have a journalist background, and I imagine you did quite a bit of research into writing this novel. What exactly did you look into?
Well, Mark, I think what happens, in a story like this, everything concrete that Tasa interacts with, so whether it's the violin, music, the food they ate at the time, the radio they listened to, the kind of coins they have then, all those concrete elements, and the war itself, certainly. I mean, World War II is a very known entity, so all those things had to be correct and true. And yet, the characters, their interactions and their actions, those things are imagined. So the research really helped me discover the realities of that time to make it as authentic as I could, so that you can read this and you feel that you're there in Eastern Poland during that period of our history.
I certainly did feel that, because your description of the town where Tasa's from, that I have to say, Linda, your description of the food made me hungry every time the characters were eating. I was like, I want to go out and get a nice wedge of cheese and some good bread. You really made it delectable. And that really brought a sense of realism to it, that I could feel that the character was there, and it allowed me as a reader to immerse myself in that environment. And I imagine as a writer that must have been fun to create.
It certainly was. I'm, as you mentioned, my background is in journalism, magazine journalism, actually, and I love research, and so I did do a lot of research. Almost you could take page by page, and if you look at, there's elements on every single page that I had to clarify and discover sometimes, and make sure that it was absolutely correct. The journalist in me had to make sure it was right. So, that was a large part of writing this story as well.
Well, what about the descriptions of the places that Tasa stays and stops at? Because the many of these were places that were destroyed in World War II, but you do a wonderful job of recreating that village feel of Eastern Poland.
Well, I think, my mother was sort of a storyteller, and she talked to me when I was, a child. She would tell me about growing up in a little village and living sort of on a farm, and, the extended family around her. And she, she described, in fact, her village at one point. I recall her telling me, there was a forest on one side and one long street. And that is how I built Poid Common, the village that that Tasa grows up in.
Well, Poid Common is a very, it seems like an isolated village. And when you look at where it's located on the map, it's almost to the border of Russia. And that was kind of way out of range of where a lot of the action happened when Germany was first invading Poland, but still the reach of the war even hit the small villages.
Oh, it did. It did. Although I think that the farther east one lived, the Germans moved from west to east, and so some of those families that lived on the fringes, it took longer for the Germans to get there. And as I said, there was a period of time where really this part of Poland was controlled by the Soviets. In addition, that part now is not even Poland anymore. These pieces that we talk about in the book of Eastern Poland, it's part of the Ukraine now.
I have to say, when I looked at the maps, I realized how much it had changed. And there are a couple of maps in the novel that reflect those changes, even in the short period of time, over the course of less than a decade, how those boundaries changed so much.
Yeah. No, it's true. Poland was a country that was always seemed to be attacked by someone, and someone was always occupying it. So that was part of the, its history as well.
Tasa's Song, a novel by Linda Cass, speaking with me from her home in Columbus here on the Book Club at 91.7. And while this does come face to face with the horrors of the Holocaust, I found it very, I can't tell you what my reaction exactly was, but I appreciated being spared the horrors of the Holocaust while being able to experience someone who was close to the horrors. This is not like going to the concentration camp and seeing the horrors happening there. Through the radio and through reports and through letters, Tasa is learning about the horrors of the Holocaust. And I found that very effective in your book there, Linda.
Well, thank you, Mark. These individuals at the fringes there, you're right. They were not in the central ghettos within Poland. They were not in concentration camps. These families were elsewhere, and yet they were also running and hiding and persecuted. And this particular family was fortunate enough to be hidden for a year underground under a barn by a very kind friend of theirs who worked with the family for years.
I noticed in your acknowledgments as well, you credit the violinist Charles Weatherby in the Carpe Diem String Quartet. And I was going to ask about the music and how you decided what music to bring to the book, Linda.
Sometimes the music, I listen to a lot of music, and I sometimes just came upon it because it was the right music that fit with a particular scene. It helped express her emotions in that scene. So I had to really sift through quite a bit of music putting this together. I will say that my father comes from Vienna, and so classical music was certainly something in my DNA, maybe. And I don't play the violin. I've been asked that. But I did play classical piano as a child, so I can read music, and I've listened to and attended many, many concerts. Charles Weatherby is someone who I have known for more than 20 years. I was very involved with the Columbus Symphony Orchestra, and at the time, as I know him, at Chaz, he was the concertmaster. So I've listened to a lot of music, and he was someone who, among the experts that I went to once my manuscript was completed, to say, hey, you know, what do you think if a musician read this book? You know, is there anything in here that doesn't ring exactly true? Because for certain things that are that particular, you know, you really, you know, I wanted to double check my facts, and he gave me a couple of thoughts along the way, late in the process, really. But the music itself that I chose really was the music that I came upon sometimes by accident. And sometimes, you know, just after you listen to music long enough, it was the right piece at the right scene.
Well, I have to say, as I was reading, I also host classical music on our sister station, 90.9 WGUC, and I, you know, could have these melodies playing in my head when you made mention of them in the story, and I do think they fit the scenes well. And I'm curious how people have reacted to that, to have those musical references there, and what else they've reacted to with Tasa's song.
People loved the music, people who weren't musicians, actually. I had so many pieces that I had been listening to that were included chapter by chapter that I actually, in the writing of this, created an iTunes playlist. And my publisher was agreed that putting it in the back of the book was a good thing. So I actually have the playlist chapter by chapter listed in the back of the book. And I've had people even say that they liked listening to the music, as they were reading. But the music, you don't need to be a musician the way I've incorporated it to appreciate, you know, what she's going through. It really is something that helps tell the story, perhaps, and it helps reveal and express the story in sound, even though it's written,
yes.
if that makes sense.
Well, I thought you did a wonderful description of the pieces as well, that I thought even for folks who may not know the melodies, that they could feel the power of the music coming through the words. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you, Linda. A fantastic story, and I loved all the music, too. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Linda Cass. Her debut novel is Tasa's Song. You can learn more about it by visiting our website, wvxu.org. And yes, a great list of classical music to enjoy while you read in the back of the book. This is the Book Club at 91.7.